Well, good morning, everybody. 11 o'clock. You're listening to Grecian Echoes, and we do have joining us on the telephone Manny Frangidakis as well as Stamati Sastra. Gentlemen, good morning. Happy New Year. And we're also in studio with both Costa Perdikaki as well as Professor Petro Vamvakas to enjoy your conversation, gentlemen. So, kalimera sas.
Kalimera.
Kalimera, Manoli.
Kalimera, kalimera.
Πώς είσαστε?
Μια χαρά. Καλημέρα. Χρόνια πολλά. Καλή χρονιά.
Επίσης.
Should I make a wish? You know.
Go ahead, make a wish.
Μανώλη, άντε και με μια καλή νύφη του χρόνου. Είμαι σίγουρος ότι ο πατέρας και η μητέρα σου αυτό θα θέλα να σου πούνε.
Άστα, άστα. Wall Street this week. Άστα, άστα.
Εγώ κοιτάξτε να δεις, η αλήθεια πάει μπροστά, εγώ ξέρεις, I'm an open book. You know?
Sorry to throw that curveball at you bright and early, Manny, but it's Costa.
It's all good.
It's all good.
It's all good.
Yeah. All right, so gentlemen, I'll defer to you two.
So Manny, let's start with the stimulus package because probably that's what is pulling the levers on the markets. Looks like the Congress, which is controlled by Democrats, agreed with President Trump for the $2,000 per head. And we got to see if the Republicans in the Senate will cave.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I see that number sticking at $600. I think, you know, 99% chance the Republicans pass on increasing the stimulus number to $2,000. That's been their pain point since March. Is how much money they'd be giving to governments, to states, to local businesses, and then individuals. So I think that you're looking at a $600, payment from the Treasury per individual and then per child, but I wouldn't expect much more of an increase from there.
And do you think that it will pass, like the president will sign it?
Yeah, I think the 600 is going to be signed, and I think your hope is, you know, if you are expecting a larger stimulus bill, which the markets are holding on to, that will probably come sometime in 2021. And that will depend on how the Senate runoff goes. You know, if the Democrats get control of the Senate and the House and the presidency, then you could expect a much larger stimulus bill in 2021. But if Republicans control the Senate, they will probably continue the conservative ways that they've had, and they won't increase that the amount of stimulus that they're willing to give as aid.
Now, from a pure economic point of view, not so much the political point of view, is it wise to hold the reins and not give so much money? Is it a better economic policy or just pure politics here?
I think it's a little bit of both, because what we know to be true is the amount of stimulus that we have enacted on the market over the last decade hasn't really had the trickle-down effect that most people expected. So I think that it is a political tool to probably alleviate the short-term pain and probably win political favor in the future. But at the same time, you do need to bridge the gap to allow individuals to put themselves on better standing to get out of this in a successful and an efficient manner. But I will also say that if you look at the Fed's balance sheet, I mean, we were at $3 trillion in September of 2019, or just under $4 trillion. In just over a year, we're now up to $7.4 trillion in the deficit. So that's a huge increase. So at some point, debt and deficits will matter again. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. And what else is on the package? It looks like the PPP will be there for small companies. They try to kind of protect it a little bit, meaning they try to put some safeguards on having small companies not to curb some of the abuse. That's part of the package, and small business loans and things like that.
Yeah, it's going to be very similar to what the first PPP package was, and that's why you're actually seeing 400 million of it just being recycled. So there was actually a headline yesterday saying that there's a new $2 trillion stimulus bill. It's not really a new $2 trillion stimulus bill. You really only have 500 million of new stimulus that's come to the table. 400 million is being recycled from the package that we had in March.
Yeah. And it looks like the stock market loves it. I mean, everything, you know, from record to record. I mean, even today, it's a
green
little bit upright.
Green shoots everywhere you see, from Europe to Southeast Asia to the U.S., all across the board. You have equities climbing higher, near all-time highs. You have every single risk asset pretty much at all-time highs, including Bitcoin, even the ags and bonds, everything, no matter pretty much where you were invested this year, for the most part, did pretty well. And markets look like they're going to end the year close to about 15% in terms of growth since 2019. So it's been a great year for markets. They're going to probably finish the year strong. You know, strong markets usually do, and bull markets die hard. So, you know, the question is, you know, we've had a great 2020 in the markets, barring a massive pandemic, which continues to, you know, exasperate. And then on top of that, we have a new strain that is much more contagious than was previously believed. So the question now is, you know, you had a great 2020. What does 2021 look like? You know, it depends. You know, I think that markets are overstretched. We are most definitely overvalued, depending on which value metric you associate to the market. But that does not mean that this does not continue, because what we know to be true with low interest rates is that you can almost peg the multiple wherever you see fit. So to be pretty much derive where you see next year ending, it's, you know, what do you see the market multiple based off interest rates? Is it 20 times earnings? Is it 25 times earnings? Is it 32 times earnings? That's really going to kind of depict on how the next year plays out.
So let me interject. This is Petros from Vakis. My question has to do with, like, you know, the market's a great market because of the stimulus policies. You know, a lot of money has been dumped into the economy. So what's the inflationary pressures of a market like this? I mean, we spend so much time, you know, pushing back on inflation, and it just seems like, you know, inflation now is an inevitability in the near future.
I completely share your theory, Petro. I see inflation coming down the pipe probably in 2021 and probably being a much larger issue sometime between 2023 and 2025.
Yeah.
You're already starting to see the tailwind of it, but the interesting thing is that actually yesterday you had the bond curve, the yield curve flattening, which means that according to the bond market, they don't see interest rates actually rising or inflation becoming a fear. Now, on our end, we do believe that it is, especially from the standpoint of supply chain management. When most of these economies and countries really come back online post-virus and we're, you know, back to production levels of 2018, 2019 from all industry sectors, you're going to see a massive inflationary spike in some of these costs and goods. I mean, you saw it this year with lumber and in previous years with steel. You're probably going to see it at some point with oil, just due to the lack of production and demand spiking back sharply. So it is something that the market is considering and has been considering for over a decade. But based off of how we calculate CPI and PPI, we don't really get a true measure of inflation. But if you just look at the housing market itself, the gains in the housing market over the last couple of years have been astronomical, including this year where we're looking at over an 8% home price increase in just the last year. That's pretty much a record since 2009.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, post housing market crash.
And inflation does have its benefits too. I mean, it's going to have to eat up some of this debt. I mean, that's like, you know, that's out there. I mean, you have like astronomical
debt.
Exactly. So you want some inflation because it's good for the market overall.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's, you know, and it's good for productivity.
Yeah.
And weeding out probably what we call zombie companies and negative earning companies, because with the rise in interest rate, some of these companies that have been able to, you know, teeter along over the last decade won't be able to in the future with interest rates rising and their debt payments increasing.
What do you say, Manny, to people that they stayed out of the market, either when they saw the drop in March, they got afraid, then all of a sudden the markets start going up and they thought they were too late, and all of a sudden, you know, it's 30,400. What do you say to these people? How should they approach it?
Yeah, well, it starts from the beginning, and half of it is just being, you know, providing psychological coaching. You know, we did have, unfortunately, a few folks that did want to cash out in March, and some folks that did, and against our advice, you know, at that point in time, you took your medicine, you took the pain, and, you know, it's in your benefit to stay put. If you had preemptively gotten out of the market pre-March dip, then that's a different scenario. You have built up your cash equivalents, and you can then appropriately reallocate into the market. The question is now, is at all-time highs, how do you put money to work in this environment when all asset classes, let alone just stocks, have appreciated greatly over the last year and few years in particular? So the question, you know, that we always get posed, and our answer to it is, you're never going to ever be able to time the market appropriately. And a lot of these factors, you know, these decisions have multiple factors, including what's your time horizon, liquidity needs, investment objectives. All these things come into play in terms of how you allocate capital and in the manner that you disperse it. But there are values. There is still value out there, and it depends on how you derive your value on each particular security. So we've still been buying equities, you know, up until the last 2 weeks, in particular sectors, individual names, not buying indexes, but things that have come down to our stratosphere. You know, a particular example is Peloton. 2 months ago, we ended up started buying it across the board. But what we do is we start, you know, we don't really carry a position that's much larger than 3% in any particular equity name, just from a risk mitigation perspective. So what we will do is we'll put 0.5% to work with, you know, multiple prices where we'll add another 0.5% or 1%, and we'll just dollar cost average our way in. And that approach has worked pretty well for us over the last decade, and I see us continuing it. But that is usually my advice to folks that are questioning how to re-enter a market. Because in particular in this market, we're living in a market where, you know, buyers live higher and sellers live lower. So you're buying you're buying a company that might be trading at 20 or 25 times earnings, or, you know, worse, maybe 30 or 40 times sales. Your hope there as an investor buying there is someone's going to buy that at a much higher valuation than you already purchased that.
Manny, I'm a little bit curious now with the new administration coming in, and those who may, you know, it is an all-time high, and I'm sure there is a percentage of investors that are going to jump out right now when the, you know, depending on their age group and so forth. But what are the differences with the new administrations in regards to taxes on these capital gains?
We still don't have an answer to that yet, because we don't know what the Senate's going to look like. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Democrats take control of the Senate, you could most definitely expect that corporate and individual tax rates remain elevated. If you remember, the reason why the market spiked post-election was it was celebrating the fact that you had a split Congress and that not much would be able to change if the Republicans retained control of the Senate. So that would mean that it would be very hard for President-elect Biden and the Democrats to, you know, bring the corporate tax rate up to 28%, which they have said multiple times over is their wish to do so, as well as raising individual tax rates, as well as raising capital gains for those investors that are making more than $400,000 a year. So there's multiple different tax policies that are on the table, but at the moment it doesn't look like much is going to be able to be enacted, barring the Senate jumping to the Democrats.
Very good. And as always, we want to close it off, and at this point, I suppose, we're closing off the year. So, Manny, real wide question, 365 days deep. Best thing in the year?
2020's ending.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be that. I mean, it really has been a year of winners and losers and massive pain and economic defaults. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, we're hoping that 2021 is the year that makes up for 2020. Now, there are obviously individuals out there that have benefited from 2020, and, you know, we're thrilled to that, but we want to see everyone jump into the pool and, you know, get the country moving as a whole in the right direction again. So for me, it's, you know, moving on to 2021 and having a bright spot and outlook that things will improve materially over the next year and years to come.
Very well. Stamati, closing comments?
Well, vaccine. Yeah. I think it's remarkable that about a year after the discovery of a new, completely new virus, the scientists were able to create a vaccine in a completely, it's a new technology, but it was proven before, and they use this new platform to create an effective over 90% vaccine by at least two companies now. There's going to be more. I think this is a scientific overachievement. Unfortunately, I think it is the biggest achievement of the Trump administration. And I say unfortunately because for the politics of it, the Trump administration decided to downplay it. And I think if you look back at the scientific community, the logistics community, the finance community, the volunteers, the about 60,000 people who volunteered for the trials, I think it's a remarkable achievement that will allow us to hug each other again in 2021.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
Amen to that. It's right.
Yeah. Gentlemen, have a wonderful, wonderful new year, and looking forward to regrouping very shortly. I guess, as they say, we'll see you next year. Yeah.
Καλή χρονιά.
Yeah. And on that, note, you know, I'm assuming we'll probably continue next week. But you know, the first show we'll do going into the new year is we'll do some surprises and lookouts for 2021 that investors and individuals should be considering.
That's a great idea. Looking forward to
very
it.
Very good,
looking
Manoli.
Forward to it.
Great.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah,
very good, Manoli.
We want your 2021 predictions.
Yeah, picks of the year.
Yeah, I want to hear the 2019 to 2020 predictions and see how true they came.
Well, I'll leave you with this. I mean, we talked about it last show, Pedro. I mean,
yeah.
Every single analyst on Wall Street going into 2020 had a year-end projection of the S&P 500 at 3,300.
Yeah.
Here we are with a massive pandemic. Corporate profits down anywhere between 20% to 30%. Yet the S&P 500 is trading at 37 cents.
Yeah.
So you can never markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay liquid, and usually they do what hurts investors the most. And most investors thought economic catastrophe was coming, and it was averted. And here we are sitting close to 15% on an annual return. So.
That's
take
great.
Your Wall Street predictions like a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, they're all over the board and they very rarely hit them.
I hear you.
That's
I hear.
It
just depends on the moment that you want to cash out, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Manny Stamati, have a great day. And
Happy New Year to
both of you. Happy New Year to you both. Nasty galapidia. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, sure.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.